Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is episode number 16 of the EBNP. Our guest is Rebecca Lungawa, the founder and president of Happy Warrior. Her company specializes in networking and consulting brands on methods to activate and engage within the esports industry. Her journey begins in traditional sports, where she sharpened her marketing and advertising skills working with the Minnesota Timberwolves. In the face of adversity, she's been able to flip those skills to provide value within esports. We hope that you enjoy the show.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hello, Rebecca. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Trent?
I'm doing great. So the first thing I usually ask the guest on the show is, how did you get into video gaming and esports?
So my career really started in traditional sports, and I was working with the Minnesota Timberwolves as a contractor for quite a few years and then in-house. And part of my job there had to do with really taking emerging technology and bringing it through the ecosystem of the organization from a brand side. I was their brand manager. So a lot of the creative projects that we had had to do with emerging technology, like taking paper tickets and using a flash seat app. So I had already a deep understanding of sports technology. And then fast forward some years, I was working, and I still am, an advisor with Stadia Ventures. And Stadia Ventures is a sports tech investment fund. So I work with them as an advisor and a mentor to startups. What we were noticing a few years ago, about 3.5 years ago, is esports tech companies were applying, coaching apps and all sorts of emerging tech around tournaments online. They were applying for our cohort accelerator programs. And you just have to take a serious look at innovation and emerging tech. So that was really my first professional introduction to video gaming and esports. But I also worked with a design team here in Minnesota called Superhuman, and their founder, Van Horgan, is a major Overwatch player. So we were kind of ideating around Overwatch and what those opportunities could be as that was starting to get franchised out. So it was not, it's not like I sat down one day and I was like, I'm going to work in esports. It was just this hot topic that kept coming up. I saw that there was a major trend there. I really wanted to learn more about it. And over time, it has just kind of taken over, where it's the thing that I'm the most passionate about. And it also happens to be the thing everybody wants to talk to me about. So I've just leaned in, like I'm 100% in on esports now. So it's been a really interesting little weird journey into the space.
Sure. So what was your history with gaming, and how did you grow up with gaming around? Did you have a family that liked gaming, whether
cards or whatever? One of my favorite pictures is when we got an Atari. It was probably like 1984, 1985. I was really young. It's a picture of my brother, who's 7 years older than me, laying on top of it, hugging it, right? So I'm not a gamer. I don't even have a single game on my phone, which is pretty rare for a woman in her 40s. But I'm not a gamer. I've never been a gamer. I've never really been a fan of anything, to be honest, which is probably why I'm really good at working in sports and entertainment, because I separate myself from any level of fandom and really am focused on the business. So like the business of basketball and now the business of esports, and can really kind of focus my energies there. But like when I was a little kid, yeah, like Duck Hunter and Mario Brothers, I could save the princess. I learned that from my brother. The whole neighborhood learned how to save the princess in Mario Brothers with the first guy, because you get like three guys. He could do it with the first guy. So everybody would sit on our like green shaggy carpet in our living room and watch my brother have to kind of learn the methodology and the cadence of the game. Played a lot of like those original Nintendo video games. Obviously, we had an Atari, but my brother really capitalized on that. I didn't get to play a ton of Atari games when I was small, but yeah. And I think the last video game that I had was a Tetris game on a clear Game Boy, portable Game Boy that I used to like take the bus downtown to work in my 20s and play that game. So yeah, I'm not really a gamer. I live with two extremely passionate gamers. My 20-year-old daughter and my 14-year-old son have been lifelong gamers. So they're really into it. So they each have, you know, consoles in their room. My son has a PC and like an MSI. And he's really, really into, right now he's getting into racing games, but he's into gaming because he wants to hang out with friends. Like that's his way to connect with other people. She I think likes it because boys like it and she likes boys.
Right. And so one of the advantages that you have as a consultant is you have a lot of vantage points. You see it from a lot of different angles. And a lot of the younger entrepreneurs have the singular experience, right? So I usually ask people, the next question is, what was the community of gaming like when you were growing up? But obviously, during that time, it was pretty turbulent. Gaming was not accepted socially as it is today.
No, I mean, gaming was a thing like television was at that time. So, I mean, just to... For your audience, I'm 42 years old, right? So if you think about when I was a kid, it was 30 years ago. So when I was a kid 30 years ago, television wasn't something that you had in the palm of your hand. It wasn't something that was always on. Like I literally remember being maybe 6 years old and turning the TV off to like go outside and play. And when I came in and turned the TV on, my show was gone and I was confused. Like, where did it go? I stopped it. Like, where's my show? And it was like the reality of like, you're never going to see that, right? Like when I grew up, you had like your moments, like everybody would have the show they wanted to watch. And as a family collectively, you had to decide. And then that meant if, you know, you wanted to watch your certain show that is only on once a week, but your brother won the day and got to see something he wanted to watch on a different channel, there was one TV in the house. That was it. You didn't have an opportunity to even ever see the show you missed. And, you know, we couldn't predict that technology. Like now I could go back and watch that episode, but it was a totally different world in terms of the way tech worked. So for us playing video games, it was like, we had to use the TV to play the video game. There's one TV. So we had to convince mom and dad and my sister, my brother and I all had to decide, this is the window of time that we can play the video game. So usually it was from 3:30 to 5 o'clock. So we'd get off the school bus, we'd run home, we would play video games, we'd fight over who got to be player one, player two. One person would have to sit out and watch. Like that was it. And then at 5 o'clock, when my mom pulled in the driveway, that was like, we're done. Like, no, that was it. That was our window. Or we could choose to get up early if we were totally done getting ready, had breakfast, just done, ready to get to the school bus. And we had a 30-minute window. We could play a video game in the morning. So it's not like how it is now where like my son has a computer with an external monitor in his room. My daughter has a TV with an Xbox in her room. They both have their phones. They can game on their phones and they, you know, they do a lot of free to play stuff on their mobile. So it's just it's a different world. It's a totally different time. You know, had I grown up in a different time period and had better access, would I have spent more time doing it? Perhaps. I mean, I loved Tetris. I was really, really good at Tetris. I'm also good at bagging groceries. I think those disciplines are very similar. I love puzzles. So like that game for me, I was just like totally into it. But I'm also have a lot of ADHD and it's hard for me to focus on one thing for a really long time. So it takes a lot to capture my attention. Even like I just can't even watch a whole movie half the time. Too busy in my brain.
Yeah, that's a lot of interesting thoughts there. I thought while I was listening to your story, I had to remind myself, are you originally or have you grown up in the Midwest in Minneapolis, or what's your story as far as that goes?
So I grew up in the dirtiest little town in central Minnesota, on like a dirt road, 53,000 acres of wildlife, a federal wildlife preserve, was my backyard basically. So we had two sides of our house were bordered by federal, like barbed wire. It was crazy. Like, don't try to TP my house. You could get stuck in some barbed wire. So, it was total country. Like, I grew up hunting, fishing, just going hiking in the woods. We were like the dirtiest kids. Like, you don't know when you grow up in the middle of nowhere that you're dirty until you're in middle school and people tell you that you're dirty. You're like, oh, all right, I didn't know. Like, I have chicken poop on my shoes. I didn't know that. No, you don't have chickens. Like, I mean, it was like that type of a life. It was so Little House on the Prairie-esque. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have the internet at my house. I was already in college when my parents finally got like some crazy dial-up internet at their house. So it was just a totally different world. I grew up in a type of environment where it was like pre-internet for my entire childhood, but my entire adult life, there's been the internet and there's been cell phones. So it's just like a really weird time, moment in time that no other generation before or after is ever going to experience of a completely pure childhood and then a hyper technology. And honestly, the biggest advantage for me throughout my entire career is that in the very late 90s, right after I graduated high school, the digital revolution was happening and I could start from the ground up and be a part of that. So I was able to be a part of some really groundbreaking projects in marketing and advertising in terms of working at an all digital agency. And I mean, one of the very first projects I worked on was taking FedEx's sponsorship of the NFL and kart racing from a paper mailer type of a scenario to creating databases from scratch to do email campaigns that led to web sitelets. And we were like so excited we could create these sitelets for these contests. It was like totally groundbreaking. Nobody was doing it. And we kind of started it kind of slow A/B testing, and then it just evolved to be a completely digital thing. And like being a part of the digital revolution at that time was just a really fun experience. And the high that provides is probably why I'm in esports now, because I'm always looking to what's next, what's innovative, what is that risk? Because it's really fun to build things. I find so much joy in building.
Yeah, the rural, there are a few people from the Tennessee area, Kentucky area, the middle America right now that feel disconnected from professional esports and esports in general, that message that you just gave really hits home with them. Although there is more infrastructure for internet and more availability, they just don't have the community, which was the next thing that I was going to ask you about. Was when you went to the University of Minnesota, was gaming prevalent then, or at any point in time? You talked about being, playing Game Boy. Where was there like a conversation with the rest of the student body? Did you see other people playing video games? What was that like?
It wasn't necessarily on my radar, you know, because I don't have a gamer mindset. I have like a really strong business, solution mindset. However, you know, I do recall there were two major, waves of things that were happening, at least in the dorm in my freshman year. So there was a comic book club, and it was like a group of people who would create their own comic books, and they would kind of do that together. come up with ideas and kind of sit in a room. And then back then, so this would have been like 96, 97, it was taking your PC computer and doing almost like build your own LAN centers. That was kind of a thing, right? And so whether it was in the community room, at our dorm or in somebody's actual dorm room, people would set up and they would game together. And that I think is kind of how LAN centers, I think communities all over the US were doing those types of things so that they could kind of be connected. And I've got cousins who are huge gamers and they would get involved in those types of things. And I actually just saw my cousin, Tim, who's just a couple years younger than I am. And he's still like playing, he's been playing Call of Duty for 10 years. Like he's been like a part of the same group of people playing together for like 10 years. Now you can just do it through, you know, the internet and being virtual. But back then there was just like a really cool aspect to kind of be in one room together and do these like 24 hour, stay up all night, 24 hour marathons. And like these loose tournaments that were not governed by anybody or really organized and didn't have money attached. It was just a tournament to do a tournament. So that was kind of starting to emerge. And even like when I was working at Space 150, which is a creative agency here in Minneapolis, one of our illustrators was a part of a 24-hour comic book series. So he would once a year get with all of these other illustrators and they would spend 24 hours and they would each create their own comic. And then it would get published in a collective book, just kind of like for fun, which was super cool. And at that agency, and I was there from 99 to like 2003, maybe, or maybe it was even later than that. And we had what we called the cage. It was just like it was basically the room that we kept our servers in. But in that space, we also had a little gaming lounge. So we had consoles and lounge chairs and super comfy and all the video games. We had stand-up Atari games. We had Joust in there. Because when you're in a creative environment, you need mental breaks quite a bit. And we found that gaming for our creative talent at that agency, being able to take a break and just game and turn your mind off and not think about client work, but just have a little reprise was really advantageous for them to kind of get their creative juices flowing again after that little break. So we were really leaning in on gaming back then.
Those sort of stories, I think, are the bedrock for where esports is now. It's the smaller firm, it's the firms that got in and really accepted gaming into their culture, corporate culture, or their, you know, startup culture early on. Mm-hmm. And again, for the listeners, we're talking with Rebecca Langawa, and I wanted to start asking you a little bit more questions about the present in esports. And you know, you talked about that you've become real passionate about it. And so I wanted to ask you why. What is it that has gone from someone who was sort of like, you know, not really a gamer to now you see it as something that you're passionate about?
Yeah, you know, the industry as a whole is extremely complex. And mm-hmm. that in itself, I think, is really intriguing to me. It's also kind of the Wild West right now. And having experience working in startups and building startups that have been extremely successful on the marketing and agency side, to then being in a pro team and understanding how processes, protocol, technology, systems, how all of those things really lend into being successful, a successful organization. And then on the other hand, that also plays in working with traditional athletes over the years, prior to, during, and after the onset of social media. So when I first started working with pro athletes, there wasn't social media wasn't a thing. And then trying to really figure out how to crack the nut of of social media and personal branding and understanding the power of a personal brand and really handholding and managing personal brands for traditional athletes and major pro athletes. Being able to take those types of experiences and learnings and applying them in an emerging market like esports, to me, when I look at the space, and I'm involved in the space from multiple levels, from the investment side all the way through the team side and the athlete side, and everywhere in between. So when I'm taking a look at it holistically, what I'm able to do based on the fact that I've been, you know, working for 21 years in sports marketing, I can take a look at that system and say, here are gaps, and this is how we can fill them, and this is what's needed, and just really understanding them. A lot of it has to do too with, like, I look at my son, who is super smart and was just antagonizingly bullied in elementary school, later elementary school years and early middle school, because he was so different. And I sent him to this ID Tech is an online, it's like a real live thing as well, but it's like they teach you about building different things around computers and videography and photography. And it's you're taught by college students. And he wanted to sign up. We got just like a flyer in the mail. He wanted to sign up to create your own mods in Minecraft. He was 9 years old at the time. And at this time, it was a summer program. He had literally been like beaten up at school, like bullied at school for being, you know, different. He is different. But he's super smart. And so I sent him to this thing and I wasn't sure I was going to go. And like, as a mom, you're like worried for your kid all day. And I picked him up and he got in the car and he threw himself back and laid his head back and looked at me. And I don't know if he's going to smile or cry. And I said, how did it go, buddy? And he was like, Mom, I found my people. And to me, what I've seen through my son and what video games have done for him in terms of building a community of like the anti-jock, to have a space for my son that he can completely be himself and be accepted, and he can find like-minded kids and even be accepted by people in their mid-20s that he plays video games with. And it is a community to me that is so integral to community and unity. It fosters, it's a challenging, it's a challenge, games, solving puzzles, working hard. You learn so much by just gaming in itself, but when you can bring an entire community together that allows you to kind of come to the table wherever you may be, that fuels my fire even more to want this to be like, to be my rally cry. And I see it as this captive audience. They're hyper sophisticated. They're super smart. They're discerning. I challenge traditional brands to get into this space, not only because it's the future, but these are like the revenge of the nerds. Like these are your future consumers. And if you're going to ignore this entire community, like it's not the fear of missing out, it's the cost of missing out. To play catch up later is going to be really, really hard for other industries and for traditional brands. And it's not just consumer brands. There's a lot of service based brands. Some are really smart and tactical and they're getting in early, like a DSL or DHL, but a lot of other ones, you know, they're going to be late to the game because they don't buy in. They're still thinking about, like you said, the old stereotypes, and they don't understand how sophisticated this audience is. So that was like the longest way to answer a question, but.
No, it's part of the show is to be organic and real about what esports is and also what the business is, because one of the things that we do experience, not advertisers necessarily, but non-endemic investors, they get into the space and don't understand the culture. And because they don't understand the culture, they don't see the value. If they don't see the value, then they don't want to continue to invest. Mm-hmm. So it's not a good fit for them, right? And so you have to work with consultants like yourself to understand, is this a good LTV for those particular clients, right? And so one of the things that I think I like about your story is that you do have children that are 20 and 14, and I'm sure that they both experience gaming in different ways. But as a parent, what kind of advice do you have to give in fostering a good quality of life in the world of gaming? Even though, like, a lot of work nowadays, you know, corporate office is gamified. Like, most places are gamified at this point.
The biggest thing, so if I'm talking to parents, if I'm talking to other parents that maybe don't understand the value of this space. First of all, I think there's a huge misconception about what gaming and gamers are. Because if you look at the statistics, it's half and half, men and women. And female gamers, most of them don't even consider themselves gamers, but they are. And they're actually contributing to a very large lion's share of revenue in the gaming market, especially the mobile gaming market at a global scale. So first thing I usually do when a mom is complaining about her kid playing video games is to ask them if they're playing video games, and they say no. And then you challenge them about what mobile apps that they have. And then you realize that not only are they gaming on their phones, like 3 hours a day with their bubble pops and their gem garbage and whatever else, they're playing these those games, but they're also doing in-app purchases and they're spending quite a bit on video games themselves. So like literally breaking that barrier and getting people to be aware of the holistic nature of gaming as a whole. And it's like, you're doing the same thing. Your child is just engaging with it in a different way. But we're all gamers. I mean, almost everybody in the US is actually a gamer at some level. So that's like a good way to start. And then also, I think what's really important is for parents to really come shoulder to shoulder and be a part of that gaming experience with their kids. And a lot of times, the thing that I get back is, well, you know, it's not like they're going to make money from this, and just the rhetoric that you always hear, that they think it's a waste of time or it doesn't add value. But it adds value in multiple ways. Gamers are more likely to have careers in STEM-based careers, computing careers, which on average, they tend to be higher paid income right out of college. They're more likely to go to college. But in addition to that, and from the most simplest sense, if you are willing to sit outside in the rain and watch your three-year-old play shitty soccer, then you should be willing to sit on a couch or sit on a chair in your son or daughter's room and watch them play Rocket League. If you're not willing to sit and do that, then like that, to me, that's kind of garbage. Like, you have to support your children in whatever type of activities that they're really passionate about and engaged in. And it, you know, if your kid was on a math league or on the chess club, I would never hear a parent say that's a waste of time. So why would being in an esports team at a school be a waste of time? I mean, it just, to me, it's like, it boggles my mind that they don't understand that direct correlation of the benefits of what this industry has for their child as a student, in addition to the community build. But yeah, if you're going to watch your kid play soccer and they're not going to be David Beckham, then you can still enjoy and encourage them to play video games. It doesn't mean that they have to, you know, that they even have an aspiration to be a professional gamer. They enjoy it. And if that's something your child enjoys, you should probably be a part of it in even some way as a fan of theirs and in an encourager of theirs.
Very insightful. And I hope that the parents that are listening to this have a way to use your experience as a strategy to build on theirs. I think the next question I wanted to ask you about, you spoke a little bit about before, is the shortcomings of creating celebrity around an esports player. And so what are some of those shortcomings, and how do you think that what you're doing and what your partners are doing to kind of create sort of these more engaging experiences with players?
So I like to think of esports athletes in two categories, streamers and the actual esports competitors. There is crossover within those two, but I think the way that you approach them has to definitely be different, and it comes down to personality. I think streamers are extremely successful and have a wide audience because they have really bold, strong personalities and narratives that people want to watch and want to engage with. It's really hard to curate that. So with esports athletes, a lot of them are not comfortable being a personality, being a brand. They just really are extremely talented at their craft. And I've seen this in pro sports, right? I've seen completely talented, raw talent basketball players over the years who don't like the interviews. They don't want to talk to media. They aren't comfortable around fans. They really don't, lean into that. They just want to play basketball. It makes them very uncomfortable, and they're kind of forced into that. So to force it is probably not the right way, but to create and help an esports athlete to understand the power of leaning in and being open and becoming a personality in their own way, maybe even in small ways, it's completely in their favor to do so, to really build that personal brand out, because you might not be able to do this forever, right? Like, in your mind, you always want to, but how can you put yourself out there in a way? And maybe it's being a thought leader in one area. Maybe it's talking about other things you're interested in and discovering what those are and putting them out into the universe. So that when you're not playing competitively anymore, you don't have a gap of not knowing what to do with your life, right? Like, you always have to be building what's next, always have to be behind the scenes thinking about what could be next. And in the traditional athlete space, a lot of times no one's even asked them, because they've been on a conveyor belt for so long, of little league to elementary school teams, to middle school, to club teams, to traveling. Then they're getting scouted while they're still in high school. They get drafted to college. There's an entire pipeline. We don't have that in esports. It's a lot more raw, and it's not a baked in pipeline or system to the pros. But in order to get to that level, that means they're working 10 times as hard, because they have to prove their skill out at such a level that they are noticed. So there's a lot of balance there. There's really cool tools. I've been doing a lot with GGWP Academy out of Australia, Good Game Well Played Academy in Australia. And that was founded by a mom whose son made it into the pros in Australia. And she was trying to navigate this whole world. And it was very frustrating and hard for them to try to figure it all out and know how to build things out. So I help them on the brand side, just in small ways. Like, we just put together a pitch deck for streamers. Like, if you're a streamer and you're going to start pitching yourself to brands, this is just a basic template that has a lot of language and tools built in that you can personalize. You can download it for free. You can personalize it, and you can start sending it out to brands that you have an affinity to, an affinity with. And one thing that I think is really important is to take the time to figure out who you are and the things that do resonate with you, so that it's authentic. There's so much opportunity when you're building your brand as an esports athlete or a streamer to use your personality while you're viable in the marketplace to bring in brand partners, but it has to be true to who you are. So An example would be I worked with an NBA player who was working on a contract deal with a company that's mission was very much about having a healthy way of life. And during those contract negotiations, he had an opportunity to do kind of like a quick engagement with a different brand partner that was a fast food chain. But it was like, you know, tweet this out and you will pay you $16,000. Like, that's a lot of money. So he did that. But because it went against this really large opportunity, like what that brand's values were, it just was messy. It's like, what are you about leaning in on a healthy way of life? Or are you peddling cheeseburgers? Like, who are you? What do you want? What are the values that you are going to hold as either an esports athlete or as a streamer, that this is what you believe in. These are your values. These are the brands you want to associate with. These are the types of products that you feel like you can rep. And then you might have to turn down an opportunity because it doesn't fit the funnel. And if you're going to go all in on one thing and say that you are something, then you need to be consistent. So that those are kind of some of the things to kind of weigh in when it comes to starting to deal with these brand relationships and partnerships and really be kind of building out your presence. But it is very nuanced and you know, you have to really think about coming out of comfort zones and maybe even hiring a lot of the theaters in most major cities have speaking coaches that help you with speaking and can help you really hone in on talking on camera or starting to stream. They don't know about streaming itself, but they know about being an entertainer. So what types of communities can you tap in and learn from? It could be a theater community. It could be a professional speaking coach. It could be going to a PR agency. But I think there's layers. There's no one big answer. I think there's layers within our industry. And based on the individual, you do have to kind of be true to who you are, your own personality.
There's a lot being said there, and there are a lot of takeaways from that. I think the big one for your story is that you are an industry transition or someone who's transitioned in industry, right? And so you have takeaways that come from the sports side, the traditional sports side of entertainment. So what are some of the things that traditional sports currently has in small market or big market teams that small market or big market teams, like, I don't know if that's a real thing in esports, that they lack, that they should be thinking about adding to their method?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because there's the things that you can learn, it's like growing up with like a alcoholic father, right? Like there's things you can learn to do from different people. And there's things that you have to learn not to do. There's so many things that are being brought over from traditional sports and traditional sports methodology that really don't belong in esports. But I'll share that. But first, you know, what are some really beneficial things that are in traditional sports that we can learn from in esports? Foundational elements that really tie the industry together that live in traditional sports but have not yet been adopted within esports, I think is the biggest. So if you think about emerging technologies over time within traditional sports that have brought a lot of data aggregation, so you can go to an online tool, a website, and you can basically search a pro athlete, a traditional athlete like Kevin Love, and you can literally see everything he's ever done in basketball. That doesn't exist in esports, right? So we don't have a robust way to draft top talent. We don't know if we're looking at colleges, because a lot of pro gamers aren't in college or aren't planning to go. There's literally not a traditional pipeline for esports. So what is that going to be? And how do we get that data under one gigantic umbrella? That's a big one. tournament organization at a global scale with you know, different languages. That's big. Keeping people safe. I had a call recently with this startup called Gamer Safer. They're using AI technology, facial recognition. They're kicking abusive people out of tournaments, and they're removing bots, and they're authenticating who the actual users are within these platforms. That's huge. Like, those are the things that I think a lot of technology has been applied to traditional sports, not only from a front office management, all the way down through coaching and drafting players and tracking the gameplay and the analytics. All of that, we can learn a lot from traditional sports, and we can bring it over. eSpat's a great example. eSpat is a startup that is aggregating globally videography and photography from esports events and esports teams for commercial use. So you can be an advertising agency. You don't have to go and shoot custom content. You can pull from this, and then the teams get a kickback. Like, that's huge. Or if you're a blogger and you're writing stories about esports, you can pull pull imagery for your blog from there. And like, those are things that Getty has solved on a professional sports level we didn't have. Like, Getty didn't have an esports section, you know, 3 years ago. And then, like, eSpat came along. Getty started using eSpat and buying their images and reselling them. And now Getty's created, finally, their esports thing. But it's like, you know, whatever, Getty. Like, if you're listening, you suck, because... like, you didn't do it in the first place. You didn't see the viability until somebody else had to create it from the ground up, and now you're just copying it. But, like, those are the things that, in the traditional sense, may, you know, traditional sports on the technology side, we really, really need an esports, and I'm super passionate about building those things out. What doesn't belong, where I think a lot of mistakes are being made, is there's things in a traditional sports model in terms of attracting, not only attracting and talking to fans, but where brands are integrating, that we're making a lot of mistakes in esports. One of them is major brands are still thinking about esports in the exact same way that they think about traditional sports sponsorship. They're coming in from a sports sponsorship level, and the esports community does not want to be sold to. They want someone to come in and be a part of the community. So when you're just coming in and you're like, what can we slap a logo on? Like, what can we just sponsor? And you're thinking about a sponsorship. It can hurt our community, because if there's not a really detailed digital marketing strategy, like, if you're going to go into a traditional sports realm and you're going to do a sponsorship with a team, you're in an isolated arena. There's all of these engagements. You're talking to people live one-on-one. In our world, a lot of it is digital. So it's a digital marketing strategy. And you need to have a complete tie-in. And this audience is hyper sophisticated. They're extremely smart. So you can't just come in and think that you're going to throw your logo on something and offer up a bunch of coupons and have everybody buy your product at one time. Like, that's just not how this audience works. Like, they see right through it. So from a brand perspective, if you want to talk to this audience, you better be invested for a long haul and actually be a part of the conversation and a part of the community in a really organic, raw, natural, authentic way. That builds credibility with the audience, and then they're going to lean in and care about you as a company and support you. So it's just, brands need to work harder in this space, and they should work harder. They don't have to work so hard in traditional sports, and that comes down to fan mentality. Traditional sports fans are not the brightest students in the classroom necessarily. They're like, give us a treat and show us a girl in short shorts, and we're happy with that. And they, you know, it's like the beer drinking, laugh with your friends, like, you know, fair weather fans. They're definitely, they love their team. They hate their team. They hate this team. They love that. Like, like that is a traditional sports fan. Esports fans are more complex. You know, they really, truly, they will follow specific athletes from team to team to team because they are really invested in that individual. Where on the traditional sports side, if a pro athlete leaves your team, like screw that guy, like this is my team. And they don't follow him to the next team. And now they're that team's fan, but that happens in esports quite a bit. You know, you're really all in on specific players that you followed, you know, for the last 6-7 years and watched grow and watched develop. So you have to really think about that fan as someone who is looking at the entire ecosystem. So for a brand to succeed here, I think a brand needs to think about that really holistically as well. Where can they come in and be a part of the community and add value to the community without asking constantly for a transaction? This is not a transactional group, but we are more supportive as a whole of brands. We have higher brand recognition than traditional sports, and we spend more at a higher percentage. We'll do a larger spend with the brands that are in this space than a traditional sports fan would. So we get it. We get that they're there, but to come in and to just put your toe in the water and think you're going to get some quick result and then bail on the entire industry, that hurts the whole industry.
Again, very, very, very insightful. And I guess this is the perfect time to promote your show, Future of Marketing Esports. I highly recommend Rebecca Langawa again, to go check out her podcast and listen to, she's got 4 episodes up now, right? 4 episodes. So I wanted to just ask you questions about these episodes because I think a lot of the value came from those. So the first episode to me explained the emotion in esports, the emotional connection between somebody who's passionate about esports and somebody who's just a non-endemic investor that gets involved and sees, I think, I don't know if you mentioned it in this episode, but like, in conversations about investments, there's 3 different categories: blockchain, CBD, and esports. Those are the key words. I don't remember which episode it was in, but maybe talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about that. The second episode to me felt like that one of the characteristics that someone needs to possess if they're trying to tackle esports is a sense of optimism. That a pessimistic mindset could lead to someone not feeling like they can make it in the space. That every day is another struggle to the point at which that it becomes a nuisance more than it becomes a benefit. I felt like the third episode was about hustling and work ethic and trying to get to get the right motivation to go and make something happen in the space. And then the latest episode, I listened to that as well. And I think that's where it comes and the most value comes to what we're trying to do here with Esports Business Network, is the networking aspect. There are so many different angles that people are coming to esports. And as it becomes multi-generational, that'll change. And there'll be, you know, like you mentioned, sports that parents were in sports, or grandparents were in sports, parents were in sports, now the kids are in sports. This, to some, like it has not grown out of infancy in the sense that by and large, the most people in esports are first generational. There's no like lineage in it. So, So talk about your podcast and like what you're doing with the podcast, and also how they can find the podcast.
Yeah. So my podcast, really my goal with developing this has been to really speak to marketers, and I mean, not just to marketers, but my goal is for marketers to really hear what I have to say about what's going on in the esports landscape, because I think it's a completely viable market for them. And I think a lot of people are afraid to get in. They don't understand it. And it is hard. Like it's a complex space. So I obviously from that standpoint, I want marketers to listen, and I want them to hear about ways that they can be successful in the gaming industry as a whole. And like I said, you know, earlier, it is a digital marketing strategy. You're reaching an isolated community where they already are. You don't have to invite them to some space. They're already there. So can you expand your social media strategy to include a Twitch? Can you expand your social media strategy to include Discord and start really just being present there and listening and understanding that audience in itself, and maybe finding a clone within an existing customer profile that you have? There could be a specific clone within the esports space. And I was on another call recently, and the gentleman that I was talking to asked a really smart question about that. Like, is it like trying to figure out which television show to put a commercial on? And it kind of is, you know, like there's just different audiences based on whatever type of community or game play that you're a part of. So I think that's really important to highlight. But also there's a lot of emerging technology within esports. And I like to talk to their founders on my podcast because I don't think people understand the ability to really prove out marketing tactics like, the key performance indicators and, you know, all of those byproducts of proving out whether something was successful or not and the impressions. There's great tools out there like Blinkfire and Zoomf Analytics, YouGov, Nielsen, that traditional brands are used to getting that type of data back. And for them to know that these types of organizations are really leaning in on data collection within the esports space and the success of campaigns within the esports space, brands need to understand that. Like, you can be successful here. It's not a shot in the dark. And I love talking with innovators in the esports space in a number of ways. I think there's a lot of podcasts around esports out there that really just talk about sales. And I want to talk about the marketing tactics because I think it's really important to understand how to communicate to this audience. What are those nuances there, and what really makes it special for them? So when I first created this podcast, it was actually brought to me, and I was really grateful for it, from MAP Esports out of Dallas, Texas. And what they were doing back right before COVID hit, they were concepting out building, it's the, you know, the Esports Futury Podcast Network, and they wanted a network of podcasts. So a lot of the episodes you're listening to now, I was recording in like April and May, and I listen to them now and I'm like, oh, I sound smart today. Like, I don't even remember a lot of the content that was discussed because I recorded them 5 months ago and then I hadn't heard anything since. So we're just now actually launching because it's a part of this super robust network. So not just my own podcast, but the entire network's podcast has been extremely fun to check out. Like, I've been so grateful to be a part of it. So if you want to listen in and you want to be a part of it, it's the Esports Futury, FUTURI Podcast Network. And they have a LinkedIn page. They have a website, which is esportsfpn.com. And there's not just myself, there's other amazing people on there. John Davidson also is a personality with them. And John Davidson is, he used to be the head of business development over at GameStop. So he's got great insight on the retail side of the gaming industry. And now he has his own consultancy agency as well. So kind of do similar things in this space, but he's one of my absolute best friends and a super stellar guy. So you learn a lot from people within the esports industry through that podcast network. And they're expanding to doing television shows and a lot of robust content. So it'll be fun to watch everything there kind of grow and evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed listening to your show, and I can't wait to hear more episodes. So if someone wanted to do business with you, what's that process like, and how are you doing business in this time?
It's been crazy slammed. I mean, I don't even know how to kind of like keep up. I just brought on a marketing coordinator that's kind of helping me on ground level, staying on top of everything. The interest in this space has just completely exploded from major luxury clothing brands that have reached out to, you know, global food companies on the brand side. But in addition to that, on the investment side, now it's the perfect time to build out technology. So investors are really clamoring to figure out what are the esports startups that they should be leaning in on and pivoting dollars to. And these startups are trying to utilize this time of, you know, global rest to really lean in on and building out the development of emerging technologies. And from the team side, because I do work with two pro teams, we are, you know, we're kind of beta testing things out and seeing how different, you know, what are the different tournament platforms out there? And let's try this solution and see, you know, we're just still trying to figure out how to run an organization in the best way, and what are those tools and technologies that we can start testing and then embedding into our everyday processes to alleviate some you know, manual work and some strain and some pains there. So it's just been a really interesting time. The best way to reach me is truly LinkedIn. I think that's a really great space to learn more about me, to listen to my podcast. I do get a lot of outreach of people wanting to just learn about esports. I would say listening to interviews I've done on shows like yours or listening to my podcast kind of gives you a good jump start. And then, you know, if there's specific questions or specific needs, then I'm happy to share those. My brand is Happy Warrior. My email is my name, Rebecca, at happywarrior.us. So you can check out my outdated website that still has a lot of traditional sports on it. But reaching out to me and my team. The biggest thing that I'm working on now is branding and marketing strategies for startups in the space and helping non-endemic brands get into the space. So those are the two things I'm leaning on, you know, pretty heavily as a consultant. And I am kind of locked in with two pro teams at the moment on their growth strategies as well. But yeah, I'm working every day of the week. It's crazy. I think like March and April, I didn't know like what I was going to do with the rest of my life. Like, should I live in my camper in the woods somewhere? Like, am I going to be able to keep my house? Like, it was really kind of weird. Like, I think everybody went through that panic. Because I had a lot of live events and speaking engagements that kind of went out the window. And now it's the way that gaming has really proven to be COVID proof. Everybody is now saying our 2021 strategy, we need to include esports. So there's not a lot of people that are looking at the industry in the way that, you know, I am from a non-biased way, like what are you trying to do? And I'm going to help you kind of figure out really a smart solution that is going to meet those goals and objectives. I don't have something specific to sell to them within the space. So I think that's really helpful. And I think it builds trust with brands to just kind of know that.
Great. And so last question, And one piece of advice that you would give to someone just getting started in esports?
My biggest piece of advice is to completely believe in yourself and believe in the vision that you have for what you want to attain. I have had a lot of naysayers over the past 4 years on this space, where I believe there's so much viability in this space and I'm really passionate about it. You try to convince somebody else and they don't get it, then move on. Honestly, because if I would have listened to people that thought it was too hard to try to do something like what I'm doing now, I could have played it safe and stayed in a specific, vertical and just leaned in there, and I would have lost so much that I've been able to build within this esports space. Like, I get to wake up every day and love what I do, and there's nothing better than that. So you have to believe in it. And if it doesn't exist, create it. Like, I didn't have no one offered me a job in esports. I've never had a job like as an employee with an esports organization. And I'm absolutely a viable business in esports. I declared myself in the esports space. I made room for myself and I put myself out there all the time. I mean, I will literally reach out to speaking, like I'll look at an event and even a virtual event, and if they don't have a female speaker, I will send them an email and I will say, I see that you're doing an event, and I noticed that it's a lot of like mostly white men. Is diversity and inclusion something that you're passionate about with your organization? If so, I'd love to have a seat at the table and speak on that panel. And that just, you know, you have to do things like that. Like, you have to put yourself out there and just say, hey, I see the gap, like that's the gap, and I can fill that gap. So be bold, go for it. If someone doesn't believe in you, they're not your person. Find your people.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And this is Rebecca Langawa. You can check her out on all social medias on.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.